Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
When we moved to South Africa, we sold our house, sold everything we owned, and we thought we were going to be there our entire careers. And it didn't happen. God was moving us back to the United States. And it was one of the darkest periods of our lives.
Everybody has a story, and every one is a chapter, a piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope.
And power.
It has many characters.
And so you and I are
a part of it.
We're not the hero. This is Epic.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. Philip Yancey wrote a book called Disappointment with God, and he said, endurance is not just the ability to bear a hard thing, but to turn it into glory. For some, disappointment becomes a wedge between them and God. It's a reason to grow bitter and determine God must be indifferent or even angry with us. Mark Bettinger has experienced hard things, great loss and disappointment. His relationship with Jesus has not protected him from pain. In fact, he's probably experienced more difficulties than many of us. So what do you do when God's path leads to disappointment? How do you respond? How is it possible for faith to endure when it seems like God has let you down? This is Chapter 8 of Epic, Mark Bettinger's story.
I was born and raised in Charleston, Illinois. It's about 3 hours south of Chicago, out in the cornfields, but it's home. Growing up, I was an only child. It didn't start out that way. When I was 3 years old, I was riding with my dad in his truck. We were on our way to Salt Lake City. My mom and brother were in a Suburban behind us, and we were on Interstate 80 in Iowa. It was a clear blue, sunny day. I remember it like the back of my hand, and I looked over at my dad. This was in June of 1980, and he slammed on the brakes in the middle of the interstate and went running back. And the next thing I remember is my aunt, who was following my mom, saying, no, you can't go over there. There's too much glass. My mom had gotten a flat tire on the interstate, and it was so hot that day that the tire blew and the rim stuck down into the asphalt. And she got in an accident that day, and my mom and brother were killed. So it was just me and my dad, and wow. He didn't really know what to do. He worked on the road at that time in construction, and he would drop me off at daycare in the morning and pick me up at night, and we would go to the taverns every night. And I got more free quarters to play video games and more Buck Rogers and Shirley Temple drinks than I could count. And little did I realize how much baggage I was carrying around at that time.
I'm sure.
He met my stepmom, her name's Cindy, a few years later, and they ended up getting married when I was six. And she figured, since she now has a six-year-old son, that she should take him to church. So we went to church, and I heard the gospel for the first time. And I went back in the back room. The pastor invited us forward. I was at a youth group called Awana, and I heard the gospel. And the pastor said, anybody that wants to come forward and receive the good news, now's your opportunity. And he took me in this back room, and I noticed on the door there was a sign that said, off ice. And I said, boy, that, I wonder if the ice machine is broken in this room. And couple years later, I realized we went into his office, and I got down on my hands and knees, and I surrendered my life to Christ that night.
At six?
I was about 7 years old.
Seven.
Yeah, and when I stood up as a seven-year-old, I remember feeling like a 1,000-pound pack had been removed from my back. As a seven-year-old, I was carrying around that much weight.
Sure.
And what brought me to a saving knowledge of Jesus is I heard from the pastor that night that Jesus loves me and that he died for me. And I had never equated death with love. I had always equated death with sadness and anger. My dad turned to alcohol. He wasn't a believer, and he didn't know where else to turn. Mm-hmm. And so I found Jesus that night, and I've never been the same since.
That's incredible. So 7 years old. How did that impact your growing up from that point?
I knew right away that God had a plan and purpose for my life.
Was there an adult speaking that over you, or did you know that?
I'm sure there were you know, influential people around that time. My mom's a prayer warrior. I know that she was praying for me. I just read in the Bible, the first verse that I ever memorized was Mark 16:15, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And I remember going out into the playground literally right after I got saved and during recess and going over to one of my classmates. I saw him and God prompted me through the power of the Holy Spirit to share the good news with this student. And I told him, I'll call him Brian. I said, Brian, you need to accept Jesus or you're going to hell. And it didn't work. You know, he ran away. But that day, the Lord gave me a preaching finger. And so I've used it ever since. And I've always loved Jesus. And that's the honest truth. I never rebelled and left my faith. Mm-hmm. I've just all through the years, which... looking back now, I don't know how that could happen, knowing all the trials and tribulations we went through, but I've just always loved Jesus and wanted to serve him, and mm-hmm. it's been 35 years now.
I wonder if, though, because as a 7-year-old, you probably had a whole lot more burden to lay down. So what you experienced as a 7-year-old, just in terms of losing your mom and your brother, that was probably very real to you to experience his love in a way, probably more than your average 7-year-old.
Probably than your average 7-year-old, yeah. It was a difficult time. I also lost another brother who died. He was a day old. So I've got two brothers that are buried next to each other. The other aspect that played into this, I was born with a disease, and they didn't really know what it was at the time. I spent the first 6 months of my life in the hospital down at Barnes in St. Louis. And they came up with this newfangled test called a sweat chloride test. And they said, we're going to test Mark to see if he's got a disease called cystic fibrosis. So they performed the test on me and the test came back positive and they were able to start to treat it. And at the time, cystic fibrosis was called an adolescent disease because children don't live out of adolescence. Mm-hmm. It causes reoccurring and frequent lung infections. And over time, those lung infections cause scarring in that scarring decreases the lung capacity. So growing up, not only was my mom and brother killed in a car accident, I had another brother who died in infancy, but they didn't expect me to live past about 6 or 7 years old.
Were you aware of that as a child?
I was, yeah. It's always been at the very forefront of my thinking.
Wow.
However, I was pretty healthy growing up, and even then, as I got older, the life expectancy, you know, increased to like 12 and then 16 and then 21. So just in my lifetime, through medical advances, the life expectancy has increased significantly. And so I was very well aware that, you know, I was a little bit different. I knew I had to do physical therapies every day. I had all kinds of medications that I had to take. And so through all that, the Lord just really drew very, very close to me as I drew close to him, and we've had a close relationship all these years.
So you went to college and graduated with a degree in clinical laboratory science, and then what happened?
I worked in the laboratory industry for 12 years, and in 2010, a night that, as my wife Jennifer and I look back on it, a night that really changed the trajectory of our lives. I was at a men's retreat. It was on August 27th, 2010. I was in a room with about 50 other guys, and we were just worshiping and praising God. And during the middle of that worship time, I can't explain it other than this, but God spoke to me. And I'm very hesitant to tell anybody that God spoke because, mm-hmm. boy, you can abuse that. It never happened like this before that, and it hasn't happened since, but I heard God speak to me, and in my ear, he said verbatim, Johannesburg, Johannesburg, Johannesburg. I looked up and I looked around, you know, Bob on my left and Jim on my right, and they were just worshiping God. And I said, who spoke to me? And I sensed it was the Lord. And I got home and I told Jen, I'm like, Jen, God spoke to me. And she goes, were you awake this time? And I said, yeah, I was awake, honestly. And she goes, well, what did he say? And I said, he said, Johannesburg.
She must have been as stunned as you were. So what did you do?
Through that specific message that God shared with me at that men's retreat in August of 2010, we sensed God pulling us away from the medical field and uprooting our family and moving overseas. And I had no idea why he said that at that time, but it took us about 3 years. And we met some missionaries from South Africa, and they came and spoke at our church, and they were from Johannesburg, and they worked with orphans. And God had given Jen and I a vision for orphans from James 1:27. Pure religion is to take care of the widows and the orphans in their distress and to keep thyself pure from the world. And so we just sensed God putting this missionary couple who ran a huge organization in South Africa in our path, and we sold our house, sold everything we owned.
Wow.
And we moved to South Africa, and we were just blown away by how fast that process happened. The average time for missionaries to raise their budget is about 18 to 24 months, and we raised our full budget in 93 days.
That's unbelievable.
It was a real testament to God's provision. And when we landed in South Africa, I looked at Jen and I said, Jen, what's today's date? And she told me, and I said, do you realize that 3 years ago today, God gave us that vision for Johannesburg at that men's retreat? We just looked at each other and laughed. God has, his timing is perfect. It was just absolutely incredible that we literally landed 3 years, and that was in 2013, 3 years to the day that he gave us that vision for Johannesburg.
So what happened once you hit the ground? What were you going to be doing?
It was a dream come true that we were now missionaries in South Africa. Our ministry fed about 7,500 orphans a day throughout South Africa at 50 different feeding centers. We helped co-pastor a church in Sahaping, a village about 3 hours north of Johannesburg. And it was an absolute dream come true. We landed, and Meredith, we lived on a safari.
Oh, wow.
You open up the curtains in the morning, and ostrich would be walking by, or an Inyala, or a sable. And I was an avid mountain biker, and I'd mountain bike up through the hills, through the, they call them zebra, and the, just the different wildlife that lived there. And it was, the scenery was amazing, but the ministry opportunity was more amazing. The first Sunday there, we shared the gospel, and 53 kids got saved, and we saw healings, and we saw children who were demon possessed become healed. And we just knew that God had sent us here to be a light, life, and love.
Wow.
And when we moved there to South Africa, we sold our house, sold everything we owned, packed up a few suitcases, put some stuff in storage at my mom's house, and we thought we were going to be there our entire careers. And it didn't happen.
Their path had seemed so clear. God had spoken audibly, and they had followed. Their financial support was raised in record time, and as soon as they hit the ground, they were seeing great things happening. It all seemed like confirmation, but it came to a crashing halt. Over the next few months, they were forced to face a bitterly disappointing reality. That's coming up in part two of Mark's story on Epic. Hey, thanks for listening to Epic. If you're not able to stick around for the rest of the show, you can always catch the podcast on our website at myfaithradio.com. That's a great place to hear other chapters in Epic, and it's where you'll find the link so you can share the podcast with a friend. Today, we're hearing Mark Bettinger's story of his journey with disappointment. Here's part two.
When we moved there to South Africa, we sold our house, sold everything we owned, packed up a few suitcases, put some stuff in storage at my mom's house, and we thought we were going to be there our entire careers. And it didn't happen. Within just a few months, inexplicably, my lung disease started flaring up and really started to struggle. And we had thought that God's confirmation, when we still lived here in the States, we talked to my doctor at the CF clinic, And he contacted the hospitals in South Africa and found out that there was a CF center in Johannesburg. We're like, praise God, I'll have good medical care while I'm there. But when I got sick the first time, we went down and met with the doctor who was the head of the clinic. And he said, Mark, I can't admit you here. And I said, why? He goes, every patient I have has tuberculosis. And if I admit you here, you run a very high risk of getting sick. Or if you get TB, it could be lights out. And said, I kept having to fly back to America. And
had you ever been that sick before?
I had been sick before. I've been in and out of the hospital since I was 17, after I was initially diagnosed when I was an infant. But I wasn't getting this sick. Okay. I woke up one morning and I was completely deaf in my left ear, and I'm still deaf in my left ear. They said I got a viral infection on the nerve in the ear. And Johannesburg, most people don't realize this, but the altitude is higher than Denver. The high altitude, the dust, and the home where we lived had a thatch roof, like one of those grass thatch roofs, and it would just rain down on you all night long, and just the atmosphere was just not conducive for somebody with my lung disease. So I would get sick, and I'd call Delta, and they said, well, because you're doing humanitarian aid, we're going to fly you home for free.
Wow.
So I would drive to Johannesburg, and I'd fly the, 16 hours home and go in the hospital for a couple weeks, get better, go on IV antibiotics to get rid of the lung infection. I'd fly back to South Africa. And
was your family still in South Africa?
Yeah, I would leave Jen and the kids back, and they would continue on in ministry, and I'd come back, and we'd continue ministry, and I'd get sick again. And after a year, we came to the realization that God was moving us back to the United States. And that was very difficult for us because emotionally, relationally, we had said goodbye. And when we came back to the States, we didn't understand or fully comprehend who we were. We were struggling with our identity. Are we, back in the States? Are we foreign missionaries? Spent some time in as one of the darkest periods of our lives, of our marriage, and we've been married now coming up on 14 years. And Jen and I really had to hold on to one another because it was disappointing. And we had told everybody, yeah, we're going to be there the rest of our careers. And here we are back only a year later. And, donors who had supported us, we had to say why we're back. And here's the situation. Just to backtrack, before we had gone to Africa, we'd been in college ministry at our church, and we had led campus ministry there, all volunteer. We had loved it, and we had started campus ministries on a couple different universities, and so we'd been in campus ministry since 2001, and when we went to Africa, we left that ministry and started working with orphans. When we got back from Africa, God gave us an epiphany. And it was a light of unbelievable proportion. And he spoke to Jennifer and I. And we realized, here's what he said. And here's what we recognized. If we couldn't be missionaries and go into all the world with the message of the gospel, the entire world comes to us in the form of international students on the college campus. And so we realized that God was doing something. He was birthing something new in us, and that was to go full-time in college campus ministry. And so we decided to do a year-long internship. Within a couple months of moving back to the States, we moved again 800 miles to Louisiana.
Wow.
And we interned at the University of Louisiana Lafayette with a college campus ministry called Chi Alpha Christian Fellowship. It's a student movement on college campuses throughout the United States and around the world. We're on over 300 universities now. So we spent a year down in Louisiana eating shrimp etouffee and gumbo and jambalaya. Suffering. That's correct. Actually, we were suffering because you almost swim to work every day because the high humidity.
Yeah.
But we loved it. It was just a fantastic experience. And about two-thirds of the way through the internship, this was in 2014, God spoke to us and said, Mark and Jen, go back home.
Wow.
And go back to your roots. and I want you to be my representatives at Eastern Illinois University. And so 3 years ago, we moved back home to Charleston, where I was born and raised, and where Jen and I were both students, and we pioneered a Chi Alpha Christian Fellowship registered student organization at EIU, and we've been the directors ever since then.
That's pretty amazing. I want to talk to you a little bit about that season. So you were a year in South Africa. You came to the determination that you needed to go home, and then you wrestled through a season of disappointment. About how long was that before you felt like God really spoke and you felt a change from disappointment to looking forward?
There's two answers to that. One, it was very, very short. And the other answer is quite some time. Yes, the Lord gave us our new marching orders, and we had the epiphany that helped our immediate short-term disappointment. But even a year or two later, there was still some disappointment, in all honesty. Mm-hmm. And even now, and it's been, 4 or 5 years, looking back, we just go, Lord, we know you have us here and we're content. We know your will is perfect, but we just miss our friends. We miss the ministry. We miss where we were at and the opportunities there. So it's not in a bad sense, that we're disappointed and angry with God. That's not it at all. It's just we miss our friends. Mm-hmm. And that takes a long time to get over, if ever.
Mm-hmm. There's a quote, I think it's Philip Yancey, said, faith means believing in advance what will only make sense in reverse.
Wow.
I mean, you can look back on your life now and see how serving in campus ministry and all of these things could lead together and point you to do what you're doing now. It makes sense.
It does make sense, yeah.
But along the way, especially at your point of disappointment, because I think a lot of people who listen to this are at a place where they're disappointed with God.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious if you could speak to that.
God makes a promise and he does not lie. But as humans, we expect when God speaks and he makes a promise that he's operating under our timeline. But just because his answer is delayed doesn't mean that he lied. And there's lots to be disappointed about with all of us. We all have trials. We all have tribulations. We all go through the flames. We all go through the fire. But a verse that Jen and I have held on to is found in the book of Hebrews. It says that we have this hope as an anchor for our soul. And hope is powerful, and we all have disappointments. I wish I didn't have a lung disease that I'm walking around right now with 35% lung capacity. I go, Lord, if I had 100% lung capacity, look how much more I could do. We may not be here right now, but God said, child, my plan and purpose is perfect for you. I know a girl, having done some work with the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, she lives in Australia, and she is 100% homebound. She can't work. She's on 100% disability, and she is on oxygen 24/7, and her lung capacity is better than mine as I sit here right now. And as much as I dislike my disease and there's disappointment of, we didn't expect to be back in East Central Illinois. That's just the honest, that's just full disclosure. God has worked in a powerful way. And if we're content with God's will and we just say, Lord, use me, I want to surrender to you. I am your servant. And we fully believe him and fully trust him for that. He does a Romans 8:28. He turns all things together for the good, and we can believe him and trust him, and he can turn our disappointments into his glory. And so that's our mantra that we just keep focusing on is, Lord, I want my life to be for your glory, and I want to serve you, and here am I, send me. And so we just keep pressing on.
I think one of the reasons Mark can believe that God will take even his disappointments and turn them for good is because he's experienced it firsthand over and over again.
So even while the disappointment still stings, it's outweighed by a trust in God's goodness. Yes, they were disappointed that they couldn't take the gospel to another part of the world. The campus ministry that Mark and Jen lead, it hosts an international event every month. And now more than 100 students from 41 nations attend. The nations are quite literally coming to their door. God is using them to spread his love to the ends of the earth. We're really grateful to Mark for sharing his story with us. You know, we believe everybody has a chapter in God's great big story. Do you know someone with an inspiring story to share? We would love to hear about it on our website, myfaithradio.com. While you're there, check out the podcasts of other episodes of Epic and maybe find one to share with a friend. It takes a village to make an episode of Epic. I'm so grateful to Jason Rackow and Ted Ross for help with production. Our show's theme song was written by Stephen Johnson, and I'm your host, Meredith Foster. Hope you'll join us next week for Epic. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.